I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest balls.
Hello and welcome to the brand new Mackellar Golf Podcast. I'm not saying this week's Mackellar Golf Podcast because we've already had one this week. If you haven't listened to myself, Lawrence Donegan and Mike Clayton chatting on Sunday night, go and have a listen to this. But this is our regular Tuesday morning slot with my co-host, Mr. Jeff Shackelford. Shaq, how are you doing after your week in Augusta?
I'm doing great. It was a wonderful week. I'm not too tired for some reason, so it was a lot of fun, despite all the junk food I ate. Not junk food. We don't call the Georgia Peach ice cream sandwich that. That's terrible. That's so wrong. I hope it didn't hear me say that.
I am not going to let this moment pass. I was obviously sitting at home, watching on TV, looking at it on the internet. The Quadrilateral, your newsletter last week. I'm not blowing smoke. People know that I don't do that. It was absolutely fantastic. Great read. So for those of you listening to this and haven't yet subscribed, go to Substack and get on to Jeff's newsletter, The Quadrilateral. He only covers the majors, but it's that's a joke. He covers more than the majors, but it was really Shaq. Anyway, well done, mate.
Thanks.
Good stuff last week. While you're buying a subscription to Jeff's Quadrilateral, get onto MackellarMagazine.com and buy a copy of Mackellar. We'll move on, Jeff. As I say, Clayton and I discussed the kind of nuts and bolts of Sunday's events. Tournament won by Scottie Scheffler, deservedly. Really good leaderboard behind him. Reminded me of the good old days of the early 2000s when we thought we were going to have the new Fab Five of,
yeah.
Who was it? Tiger, Phil, Ernie, Goosen, and somebody
VJ?
Else.
Yeah.
VJ, of course. Goosen was the fifth Beatle. He was the Pete Best
yeah.
of that scenario. on to the Masters. Just, I guess I should start by asking your general impressions of the week. In terms of recent Masters, where would you put it?
It was above average. We got him to the 12th hole. Unfortunately, it was another year where once the leader got the ball safely on the 12th green, it felt like it was over. It just would really be nice to get a buzzer beater to the end. I thought we were going to get it, but Amen Corner got the guys again. And so we got him to the back nine. That's exciting, but it still would be nice to get to the end and see some people hang in there. I think it was a nice leaderboard because it was just a nice different group of styles on the leaderboard, you know, just different kinds of a variety on that page, which is fun to see. And of course, Bryson just reminded everybody what it's like to have a quirky, fun character in the mix. And Max is just a quote machine and fan favorite for that and his genuineness and his honesty. And then Aubert, you know, just stole the show with for all the people who hadn't seen him yet early in the year, and to do what he did in the first major, just amazing. And then Scotty, I think I'm most amazed by the fact it just didn't feel like he was even close to as good as he has been some weeks, at least with his iron play. And that's usually the thing that Augusta National exposes, and his short game made up for it. And his power, I think, was key. I mean, that was, didn't you, I don't know what you and Clayton discussed, but yeah, that's where the new 13th tee, for instance, kind of seemed to turn it into a automatic three shot hole for Max and Colin Morikawa. And so that took a little something out of the thing in some sense. But, I mean, they were already kind of toast by the time they got to 13. So maybe not. But anyway, great performance by him. And I don't care for the way he plays the game. Again, this was kind of the same this time as it was in 2022. And we can get into that. But in terms of the rules and pushing the boundaries there, I don't get that stuff. It's just so beneath him, and it's not necessary because he's too good to have to bully rules officials and try to push the edge. But anyway, I just thought it was I think the best thing about the week, Lawrence, was that it was a low drama, just kind of a classic Masters in the sense the way it's sort of built, and The weather was nice, but interesting enough, and a celebration of the game, what they want, and not no major rules, brouhahas or live PGA Tour crap, or you know, it just was a celebration of the sport, and that's what makes the Masters great when it's on.
Just to pick you up on the, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you are right. Your instincts are right. I don't think he's. His approach play numbers are, I think he was kind of obviously the top end of the pack, but they weren't great. Certainly not what they usually are. Short game stuff was phenomenal. He was the best player. Golf course identified the best player at the moment, so no surprise there.
Course management
just from
too.
My perspective. Well, course manager as well. Yeah. Again, yeah. I must touch on. We're not big on caddies, but. Let's touch on Ted Scott at some point because his record now is just extraordinary. Just as a general consumer, I thought it was almost perfect. Really,
yeah.
I mean, you identified the cast of characters. Maybe the drama didn't play out with to the extent that we might have hoped for, but certainly the cast of characters was diverse and appealing. I thought the golf course, again, you touched on the quadrilateral. I think the golf course, from a distance, anyway, looked presented as well as it has been for years. You note the de-escalation of that ludicrous rough. Good on them. I thought, do you know what? Fred Ridley, I am such a Fred Ridley fan. The tournament itself seems to have really rediscovered its soul since he took over. I mean, let's not dwell too long on Chairman Payne, but Fred Ridley, his press conference, as well as having some nuggets in it, was really assured and made me, I can't believe I'm saying this, but made me feel that as stewards of the game or the professional game go, actually the entire game go, Fred Ridley is right up there. He looks great. I mean, he looks and sounds great. Not looks, but sounds great. Seems to have the right instinct. So I loved it all, really. From beginning to end, obviously, to touch on the TV coverage, it's great. The Masters app is just absurdly, yeah. just incredible. Here, can I ask you? So, getting all that positive stuff out of the way, you went hard on Scheffler, on your Sunday night newsletter about his. Let me frame this correctly. His behavior, his approach to rules. Any specific instances you want to highlight?
Well, I put it actually. It was in my winners and losers first version of that, which was winners only today. It was in that. I didn't spend much time on it in the game story, but dwelling on the flight and looking back at I actually saw a photographer in the airport who showed me his images on the second hole, and I'm still at a loss as to why he got to drop from a crosswalk closer to the hole. I've never seen that in my life, but the photographer who was out there showed me all the shots, and he felt that because television was suggesting that he was trying to drop left to get a better angle, and it was actually Ken Tackett, according to the photographer, trying to take him left so that he was not getting closer to the hole with his drop, which you're allowed to drop from a crosswalk. It's trampled down and all that.
Yep.
And he ends up dropping closer to the hole. I'm not understanding what happened there. But the bigger point is, you know, he got a drop from the trees on three that a lot of people felt like the scoreboard was not going to be in the way because there were trees in the way. So he got relief there. This goes back, of course, to 2022, the incident on 18. And I just don't understand this. You know, we had the one at Phoenix where he got the drop. And he kind of pushed the official to drop it where he wanted to drop it. And he took two drops that were, he knew the way he was dropping them, he'd be able to place the third one, you know, that kind of stuff. So the one on two, though, the thing, as you know, that drives me absolutely nuts is he's banging around behind the ball, behind the green. He hit That's his third right. shot long.
Yeah.
The ball moves or oscillates, let's say. It sounds like it oscillated. It sounds like he didn't move it out of its position. And so I'm not saying he is a violation, but I have a problem with the fact that he just said, well, the patrons went, oh, didn't move. And well, they're very pro-America. And, you know, what you do in that case is you just simply bring Colin Morikawa over and go, look, I put my club down. It just barely nicked it. It oscillated. And the people here were watching the ball, so it didn't move either. Are you okay? Are we, you know, we're good? And Colin, of course, is going to go, sure. You know, he's not going to, he didn't see it. And then you move along, but he didn't bring him over, didn't ask for an official ruling to just clarify. And I, it's just sort of this sort of bull in the china shop thing that some people think is an attractive character character trait in a lot of the golfers that we've seen in recent years. And I don't, I have no problem with somebody using the rules of golf if they know them to their advantage. I think we actually admire that the people who know those ins and outs and use them well, but it just feels like he's always using them to his advantage, regardless of whether it might look a little bit shady. And I'm just at a loss given how good he is, why he needs to do this, and why his, when a rules official approaches, he's the one taking the initiative and trying to bully them into what he wants. And we know over time it's, well, you know, most players go, well, here's my situation. What do I do? And I know the rules guys, and we know they're in a compromised position right now because the commissioner is just absolutely feckless and has no regard for the integrity of the game. And so they don't have any backing when there's a disagreement, and they still stand up to some people, but it's very hard to stand up to the stars of the game now, or the guys who are on the policy board or whatever it is. And so they're in this position where they have to find a drop and a solution and whatever it is. And it's leading to the situations where the problem, Lawrence, is that golf is not the most thrilling sport to watch. It doesn't have the largest audience, but one of the things the audience really loves about it is that it's played with a certain level of integrity. And when it loses the reputation of being a sport played under its rules, by the rules, with admiration and respect for the rules, they're really in trouble. And so that the adults in the room don't recognize this and say, look, when you have a situation, show some respect for the official when they come there. Don't tell them how it is. Let them tell you what the problem is. If that's why you call them over, let them tell you, show that respect, have it be a nice tone. Don't do this, just push things. So it, big picture, it has the potential to really backfire on players and the tour and all that. And but as we know at the Masters, there's been a lot of situations like that where there have been oddities in the rules. So I was surprised there wasn't an official review. There was no good camera shot of the ball moving, so it wasn't going to get overturned. It wasn't going to, but just do it the right way so everybody feels good. And he just doesn't function that way, and I find it disappointing because he's so good right now. And like, why open the door to people thinking less of you for in that way?
Yeah, I do remember that the Phoenix incident you were referring to. He is very quick to get his hands on the ball.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, they all are.
They are.
Yeah.
More and more.
Again, yeah. Your point about, I think you made it, didn't I? I think I read it in the quad that he was asked the spectators about the oscillation thing on behind the second green, and they don't run the tournament. And that's true. Yeah, you make a reference to the cravenness of the PGA Tour commissioner when it comes to handling the players. They basically run the show these days. We all know that. But I'm surprised that the Masters would look at that kind of stuff and the rules officials there might have a bit more backbone. I'm surprised at that.
Well, it's interesting you say that. One of the things I noticed this year is traditionally so they've brought the tour rules staff in to help do more running of the tournament and ruling, which I think is great. They're all really good at what they do, but they're in this current place where they're a little bit compromised. Obviously, I saw people from the PGA of America, the USGA, the RNA out and about. But what I noticed, Lawrence, is there were very few duos. Usually it was always a green coat member of the rules committee, the Masters rules committee, and then somebody from one of the other organizations. And I've noticed way less of that. I think I saw three or four of those duos. You used to always see a combination of the two. They always work together. And so it's the club has definitely turned things over more to them. And so you have more just one rules official that's a tour guy, and there isn't that green coat, which does bring a certain level of something else to the conversation. And I don't know why that change has occurred, but it to me, it's It's just such a weird risk to take for everybody to push these things. And yeah, it was probably the one little blemish of the CBS show. They didn't really acknowledge the fact he dropped in front of the crosswalk,
yeah.
Which is just, okay, that's closer to the hole. And you know, the Masters has never had a rules official in the broadcast booth. It's the one tournament they just haven't done that. And as you know, it's one of the things that television does really well. That's good for the sport. When there's a rule situation, they educate the viewer on the rule and why it's done. Like Mark Dusbevic does it almost every week now on the tour shows. And he's so good at it and so good at educating you and explaining why they did it. There's none of that. Yeah. Cause people used to hate David Faye when he did it. Cause there was the bow tie. It wasn't that David was condescending, but the bow tie made it sound, they just pictured right. him, you know, the USGA guy speaking down to you. And it made people think the rules are sort of snobby. And we know they've tweaked the rules to make them more appealing and understandable and change the language. And so I always think it's a great thing when television does it. And you see it in other sports. I mean, the NFL, NBA, they now always have an official and they explain it, and it adds to the thing, but the whole package of what they put out. But it's just not been the master style to have an official in the booth.
I don't want to dwell too long on what I guess you could quotes and quotes the negative aspect of Scheffler's win. It was a brilliant performance, a deserved winner. But maybe that might be something Chairman Ridley might look at next year. And not specifically at Scheffler, but just to kind of try and push back a little on the dominance of players over rules officials on the professional tours. It's not, as you are right, you know, nobody, again, I've got to be careful using my words here. Players, you know, want to have great reputations. Of course they do. And the sport wants to have a great reputation. As you say, part of its appeal is the kind of quotes and quotes integrity and also the commercial appeal. You know, there's a reason why all these you know,
you're damn right,
big sponsors they want to attach themselves to the game of golf. So
game of integrity, yes.
Yeah, and you know, we'll come on to Fred Ridley's press conference in a bit, but that, as I say, that might be something you might want to look at for next year. It would be really welcome. I noticed this morning our friend Josh Carpenter tweeted out or X'd out the viewing figures. I mean, just not great again, Jeff. You know, the trend continues. I think down 20% or something. I think.
Yeah.
I was
surprised.
I given that the week built beautifully, but still, and of course, Ridley talked about this in his presser that, you know, there's different delivery, that, you know, content is delivered in so many different ways now. But I mean, has it progressed markedly from last year in terms of content delivery or diversity of the way in which people consume the Masters? But I think the general number, I think, is just 20% down the last year, and the lowest number since Hideki. You know, we can go on and on and on. I wonder, what do you think of that, Jeff? And I wonder what the Green Jackets think of it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're surprised because the ESPN ratings the first 2 days were excellent. Obviously, Fridays couldn't be compared to last year because last year there was a rain situation. But yeah, ESPN got really nice ratings, and Tiger was certainly deserves some credit for that a little bit, but not a lot, I don't think. So, I was a little stunned at the weekend. I thought it would be about the same as last year. So I'm shocked. Yeah, the question everybody has is how much is Nielsen accounting for the actual streaming? You know, the CBS broadcast is on masters.com. I actually had it, you know, in the press center because I screen capture stuff from the broadcast. So even though they give us these amazing monitors, you can watch every hole, you can watch. It's incredible. But I do that so I can capture those unbelievable drone shots. I mean, I just drooled looking at them on the flight home yesterday. I just couldn't believe them again. But so does that viewership on the website, where, you know, there's people out playing golf who've got it running on a phone, are those numbers being counted? I mean, they did note, I think it was Austin Karp, Josh's colleague at Sports Business Journal, who noted that the out-of-home numbers last year were because it was Easter Sunday, they're tallying, I guess, I don't know, the television on and recalendars when the family's out for Easter brunch. I don't know how they do that stuff. So yeah, we don't know what part of the streaming is being accounted for, because we know the experience is so good and people are so used to streaming the Masters now. When they're, you know, driving in the car, even they'll have it on so they have the sound. And but yeah, I got to think that it's some, there's also just a hit from people playing more golf, people not liking the players, nobody legendary on the leaderboard. And then yeah, after Scotty landed on dry ground on number 12, I think it was over and people kind of knew that. So and then you just see the decline on linear. I mean, the Golf Channel live from numbers, you see compared to what they used to be and things like that, they just aren't the same. So I don't know what to read into it entirely. It's not good.
just pulling up Josh's thread here. Yeah. Actually, oddly enough, the viewership peaked after Scheffler had won.
I know. Well, it always does get a bump at the end.
Do you know what, Jeff? And again, to credit Josh, he makes this point. We'll never know what the streaming numbers are on the Masters app. No. But I tell you what, I can guess that the amount of streams on Justin Thomas's last four holes, every shot. I mean, that is a snuff movie. It's compelling. If you haven't seen it,
I have not.
I don't know how long the Masters. Well, you got
to
go.
Well,
watch
I was
it.
On the, just to tell you, I was on the course and he came, I was sitting up at the top of the grandstand on Amen Corner and one over, he's going to make the cut. And one over at the time, by the way, was really good golf because it was brutal out there. I come in and I see a notables thing on the board. Well, what the hell happened?
you got to watch it. I mean, if everybody listening to this, they've got to go and watch it. As I say, I don't know how long that stuff stays on the Masters app. But it is, it's compelling. It's absolutely, I mean, talk about a guy unraveling.
Oh my.
Talk about nerves, a guy succumbing to nerves and uncertainty. Oh my goodness. It's, as I say, the streams on that must be huge. Poor Justin, actually not poor Justin Thomas, you know, no sympathy for the AGGA senior tour. We'll move on.
By the way, is that the most amazing thing that you could go to the scorecard and click? And every once in a while, there's a glitch and a shot missed, but.
Yeah,
that's just the most incredible. I did it this morning today because I read some comments on my newsletter about Hadwin, how to plug lie, and some other stuff. And when you just, it took me 20 seconds to get to the scoreboard, pull the name, click the shot. It's so simple and beautiful and easy, both on the phone and on the desktop. It's amazing, just an amazing. And then they're embracing YouTube this year. They're doing, I think they see where social media is going, although they did great stuff on Instagram. Beautiful, almost too much in a way, but beautiful. And then the app. And I have not.
TikTok.
That's where you're where the kids are. I'm not on TikTok. What did they do there?
Yeah. It was just some beautiful stuff. I mean, it wasn't, it didn't feel overwhelming to me. I don't go to specific feeds. I just take what my algorithm gives me.
Oh, you. That's all pathetic.
So last week it was all the watch sellers of the Diamond District in New York mixed in with the Masters for me. It was really, really good stuff. And you are right, the YouTube page, they've really embraced the YouTube page now. It's just wonderful. It looks amazing. The content is just endless. And it really is well worth, goodness me, you could spend days and days on there and not be able to get through it all. So again, we're heaping praise on these. I can't believe it. Heaping praise on the Green Jackets. Jeff, I guess I want to ask you about a couple of things related to the chairman's Wednesday press conference. Again, we spoke about the tournament itself with Clates the other night, so I feel we can go into other places. He did mention that the Augusta National would be supporting the RNA and USGA on its rollback. No surprise there, but he was pretty pretty detailed about, you know, why, and, you know, talking about he didn't want to play the Masters on an 8,000-yard golf course. Again, it was more as much the presentation as the actual fact that they are behind the USGA and RNA. Were you, a couple of questions. One, are you surprised, and what impact do you think this might have on the wider game?
I think I was surprised by the tone, and that's why when I got my question in, I essentially I didn't word it as well as I would have liked, but I was struck by his sense or the sense he gave that he's kind of tired of this. And I'm connoisseur of the distance question every year, the distance topic, and this was the first time that we've gotten that kind of. In the past, it's been, well, we'll continue to add tease sort of thing, from both Fred and from Billy Payne. Oh, not this year. It was, yeah, we're tired of this. We're tired of it, and we don't want to be 8,000 yards. So I said, whoa, okay, so that's why I went the way I did. And then he backed it up, and he also threw in that in the response that little Sicilian slash Georgian message to the PGA Tour to. Don't be a problem on this. Get on board in the PGA of America as well. So, I think that's the most exciting thing that he expressed the fatigue, and then of course you watch the tournament play and you watch guys. I watch Ryan Fox and all these guys hitting irons off number 10, 10s at most of 3 wood now for most guys. It's 485. It's a drive and a short iron. No matter what wind, almost it's interesting. So yeah, they're tired of it. And I think that they're probably tired of spending money on it. And but more importantly, it's amazing, Lawrence, out there, how many more people are recognizing what we know is the way it messes up the walk in the park. It messes up these ridiculous walks back to tees. The patrons have to make them too if they want to watch a tee shot. I mean, it just throws everything out of whack on the golf course, and more people are because. I mean, that's the beauty of the Masters. Everybody knows the course so well. I mean, Morning Joe today, I watched it on my DVR, and they're talking about dynamics of the holes, and they're not really even that. Joe Scarborough's like a casual golf fan, and he knows every hole at Augusta. Everybody knows the holes and the dynamics. I mean, when Ludwig hit his second into 11, and because we had the tracer, which they used to not have, but the tracer, you went, uh-oh, you immediately knew, like, oh, that's too far left, and that's the beauty of the place. And so more people are realizing that these tweaks are not, or that they're just constantly adding distance is not helping. And that came up also, of course, with the 12th hole discussion for the week where,
That was funny. That was funny.
Yeah, it won't be happening in his chairmanship, but and what does that say? That even, and of course, people like Brand will go, well, see, the 12th just still plays just as hard. They haven't lengthened it. Well, it just doesn't, it's more complicated than that.
That's
Green's also gotten a lot
gaslight.
smaller over the years. There's other stuff.
Well, it has. I kind of noticed that this year. Yeah, you are right. I mean, that's straight up gaslighting from Brando.
Yeah, it's just
I
it's
admire him greatly, but
unnecessary.
that's ridiculous. A couple of things. These things, the point being, Jeff, well, actually, a couple of things. One, very funny, you mentioned the Sicilian message. I think it was I hope they come and go along with us. Otherwise, it'd be a great deal of stress on
Yeah,
the game. I thought that
that
was really
it doesn't
funny.
need right now. Yeah, which was just a little bit of a slap, like you guys have made a mess. You don't need to have another mess.
Oh, brilliant. I loved that press conference so much. And the thing is, Jeff, these tweaks, this added distance, it's not making any difference. You mentioned the
No.
fifth. I mean, they're just hitting, they're now able to be hitting, nine irons to that back tier. At seven, again, if you hit the fairway, it's just a flip. I'm
I
trying to think of
know.
the other ones. I mean, well, even 13. I mean, you were saying Scheffler and Morikawa on Sunday afternoon, both of them hit 4 irons into the
Yeah.
green. $25 million for to change from a 7 iron to a 4 iron. That's not great value for money, is it?
No.
So yeah.
No, and we saw that
Did you?
last year that it was already relevant, the new 13th. Now, Ridley made a good point, though, that more people ended up going for it last year because and he gave me a great idea for a piece, actually, that I'm going to work on. But that it was counterintuitive because by going back longer, fewer guys were hitting through the woods or into the pine straw. So more were able to go for it. And, but yeah, I don't think they envisioned. That tee being absolutely basically, yeah, because the wind this year was brutal. So the numbers are all screwed up on 13 and 15 this year in terms of eagles and guys going for the green because the
Okay.
wind was insane. But for at key points, not Sunday, but other times it was into the wind a lot. But the point is, they spent all that money and it's already relevant. Well, what's going to happen when Christo and the more Christos come along? And I don't know if you saw any of his yardages into holes. You know, he's hitting wedge into 11 now already.
I think it was 89 yards into the first. I don't think Christo. Again, I hate to rag on somebody. I don't think I haven't watched Christo recently. I don't think he'll be back at the Masters anytime soon.
Anyway, hopefully, you just don't know. But anyway, the point is, it's not. It's just not that great that you have to go do these walks back and then they're right back to where they were. And it just shows that it's the equipment that needs to be done. Part of it, the club does deserve a little bit of blame in terms of their 2T thing. They don't have the flexibility to go forward much when there is an extreme wind event like Friday, which was just the one of the most, it was so vile. It was just so nasty out there. And, yeah, they don't have the flexibility on some holes, and it would be nice both when the hole has been lengthened too much or when you just like to mix it up a little. And but yeah, to your what you said, 7, yeah, they're still hitting a short iron in when it, now granted it was downwind a lot this week, but they did widen the fairway, which was nice. The line was better. I feel like a tree has gone there. 15 definitely lost a couple of trees, which it could lose a few more. And 17 now definitely needs, because it plays the hardest hole, and it's just kind of, it just doesn't look right. And it's such a great hard green. It doesn't need that. Oh, but the distance thing is, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, but I do think it's got to be starting to become apparent to all of them that it's not it's not going to be enough what's been proposed. And then to have the women, the women hitting all these short irons and everything from the members' tees has got to be a little bit eye-opening too to the guys.
The actually, I'll ask you about the golf course itself. How do you think it presented this week?
It was. I mean, it was amazing they were able to keep playing on Friday. I know Rom said he thought it should have been stopped, and Tiger, if you read his transcript Friday, I wasn't there, but he said he threw in a, you know, if they're able to finish this afternoon, which was not a reference to the daylight, it was a reference to the forecast, which we knew was going to get ugly in the afternoon wind wise and whether they'd be able to keep playing, and they could. I was a little shocked at Saturday's pins. They just seemed too hard. They were trying too hard to control scoring in some spots, just unnecessary, I thought. But yeah, I like the where they're starting to widen now. That's good. I hate the fairway cut still, Lawrence, towards the tee. It does work. It slows down drives, but I'd love to see the ball run more. But if they let it run, I mean, they're gonna hit flip wedge into 15. They'll get it down the hill. Yeah. It's a good drive, but 15 still is tight. So all in all, I think the biggest negative would be the bunkers. They deepened them, and you know, to Chairman Ridley's point about the beautiful counterintuitiveness of the 13th, this is kind of a less beautiful counterintuitiveness. You groom the sand, you make it perfect. So why do you see you're deepening them to make them harder? How about the sand be more of a penalty? That's kind of a weird one to me, you know, because you're seeing able-bodied young guys struggling to get in and out of them. I can't imagine how their members do. I've given up on the look of the bunkers. That we'll never get the McKenzie look back, but I don't think they need to be deepened as much. The new pins were mostly good. Rory explained, you know, they continue to sharpen some of these edges and swales around the greens too much. I think they could do them a little more gently, because you don't see guys. So it's either a putt or a flop shot. And there's just nobody. I mean, Scotty occasionally is hitting a bump and run, and it's probably why he's playing well there, by the way, because he can do it. Yeah. But it's a hard shot to hit. Somebody was asking me that, like, why aren't these guys trying to bump and run there? I go, well, when the bank is that steep, you just don't know what you're going to get. Whereas if some of this work they do, I get why they do it. Some of it's actually for drainage, but it's not done from a golfer's perspective, I guess, sometimes is what bothers me. Let that guy have that bump and run and that option. And we know when you give tour pros options, they're actually worse. They think too much. When it's one or the other, they don't think as much. And anyway, this is really in the weeds stuff, but it does impact the way it plays, and it influences other courses, as we know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the bump and runs again. Just purely anecdotally, my memory of the week watching some of the best short game was were bump and runs. They're really cool shots. You
Yeah.
make a great point on the bunkers. They're volcanic at this stage.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, I mean, that bunker on nine, the bunker left on nine, where Morikawa found himself. My goodness,
Yeah.
Jesus! Can you imagine anybody over the age of 40 trying to get out of that thing? It was just.
Did you see? I mean, his swing on the second one after he left the first one in. I mean, he did that, you know, through impact, that quick flip up, and then he's jumping as high as he can. Now, he's not the tallest guy in the world, but that to me showed you how deep the thing is. That bunker has always been deep, but not, it's even more. It's kind of bonkers. So, well, I'm glad you saw some good bump and runs, because I didn't
Oh,
see many.
yes.
And but when they do, it's a beautiful shot, but they're kind of discouraging that. I mean, I watched Tiger in the practice round on the right of 11. He was just hitting all flop shots over the bank there. He wasn't even toying with a bump and run. And then, of course, I was there down on 15 in the grandstand in the morning when Spieth made his nine. And that was just weird on multiple fronts. I'm not gonna that wasn't I'm not blaming the surrounds there, but I do wonder. I would love to have asked him why he tried the shots he tried, but it wasn't really the right time to bring that one up.
Yeah, it was
Second
weird
nine
when
on
he went.
15. Oh, yay.
It was weird he went back the way. Anyway, we'll leave that to
Yeah,
one
no,
side. We'll
I
leave
don't
that
know why he
transition.
went over to the other side, why he didn't want to play the shot. Anyway, it was a surreal scene. I got to tell you about one moment out there in the grandstand. I mean, one of the things, Lawrence, is so great. No phones. So everybody's so locked in on the action. And then you listen to the people there know the it's unbelievable to me the stuff they know. I mean, when Bryson shot 67, excuse me, 65, how many people out there, and I had forgotten it. And this is my job. They immediately go, oh, so he shot two under. And I went, oh, and then I remembered his comment from 2020, but they immediately seize on that. So anyway, but so on six on 15 that morning, it was cold, it was cool, and it's just tough. It was just tough. And they're restarting. So Keegan's group, he's playing with Hatton and Pavon, who just go. They play really fast. Pavon's on another level, speed-wise, to the point he marked. Hatton hit a ball up on 15. He marked it, just threw it over to his caddy. I have not seen a tour pro mark another guy's ball in years. So, and they obviously were, I think Hatton gave him the signal, go ahead. Yeah, he didn't think he was going to do anything. So anyway, they and then there's Keegan, who's not fast. So 16, Keegan hits it in the water, and the two speedsters go up about halfway while he goes to the front of the tee to drop and hit a shot. He hits a shot. The two quick guys then go up to the green, and Keegan proceeds, and we're watching this in the grandstand and laughing. We're laughing, not loud, but all these people were like, "What? Look at Keegan! Look at Keegan!" And he's walking to the green, dragging his club, and walking as slow as he can. He's moping and he's dragging the club for a good 100 yards, and then he finally picks it up and he finally goes up to the green to mark his ball. But it was part slow playing, part moping. And it was just, it's the kind of thing you don't notice at a normal tournament. One, because there's nobody else inside the rope, so he's just exposed there. You're just watching him. And then people would probably go back to their phone, or they'd go to the 50. Yeah, they'd be more distracted, and everybody's just watching it. So it's a little entertainment you get out there because of the cell phone rule and because of the knowledge of the fans. And I'm back to calling them fans now. I'm out of the patron mode. I was in it during the week. I'm out of patron mode now. So anyway, it's little stuff like that that makes it such a great spectator experience.
I would have loved to have seen that. Clearly, Pavon and
Oh.
Hatton were at their wits' end by the stage.
Oh yeah. I mean he's not horribly slow, Keegan, like he used to be, but he just plays at a different clip than they do. And Hatton was just livid after the round because the group in front of him was, and I, you know, it's funny. I watched, they didn't look that slow, but they were, it was Reed, M, and I'm forgetting the third person now. And they were not quick. And Hatton just unleashed on that. And I don't blame him. He'd have more credibility probably with the rules officials if he didn't spit on the greens. So
Yeah, that was
I wonder what kind of letter he gets from the club on that one. I'd love to read that one. I'm sure he gets something.
the okay, Jeff, this is your big chance. The club has called me to ask you I have a problem with these trees on the right of 11.
Trees
left on 15.
Yeah.
I want you to explain to me, a layperson, why they're there. And I mean, I think I can guess why they're there. But, you know, what do you do to get them out? How could you get them out and still retain the integrity of the golf course?
The mystery on 11 with those. So those three, they either left them there or they left two of them and they picked up and moved one. Because I remember watching the aerials as the 11th hole work proceeded. So that is where that used to be fairway. And then in the Hootie era, they planted that swarm of trees, and then everybody hit to the right of the trees and had the clean shot to the green. You know, that whole debacle of the change. And so what's interesting, since they realigned the tee, nobody hits it way right anymore, because it's hard to do and there's no gain.
Well, Bryson did it.
Did he do it intentionally?
Oh, no, he did it intentionally, and he didn't get entirely screwed, but it was
okay. I'll pull that shot up. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
one.
And I think I saw Rory doing it as well. I mean, he kind of just got inside the line, so he didn't have a very good shot. But anyway, it just seems
so. There's no use for them. Yeah, architecturally, I guess it was sort of we'll leave three to show that we didn't completely blow up what Hootie did. That's my only theory, because they look stupid and there's a big catch basin over there. But anyway, nobody hits it there. And what I hate about it, of course, is if you really subscribe to the philosophy of the founders and you listen to people like Crenshaw and Ray Floyd, who played the course a lot, there was a beauty in the massive width of the old 11th, because some people wanted to be down the left side hitting over the water. Ray Floyd always wanted to be down the right side hitting into the green. And I love that. And we know that the green holds up no matter what, because it's just a hard shot because of the wind. It's downhill. There's water. It's the Masters. You bail out right. You got a tough up and down, all that stuff. Like, why? It's just, it goes back to like the 17th hole. The greens still defend themselves well. So why bother to do things that prevent players from hitting to the green with like trees in that case? Same with 15. That area to the left has always had those two trees, but now it feels thicker. So it is, you don't have anybody trying to hit like a punch through the trees, let's say. So that's weird. And of course it's made worse by the right swarm of trees, which, like I said, two were gone from there. I'm positive. It looked way better from the tee. From the tee the last few years, it just looks stupid. And the fairway tilts so hard left. So it's such a hard tee shot to get it a chance to go for the green. And if they took those out on the right, you'd still have a hard tee shot because of the way the ground slopes. So I just don't, I don't think those trees were intended to be permanent. I think they were kind of a stopgap, but I think they're going to keep chipping away at them and taking them out. I don't know why they just can't do it at once. And 17 is just goofy down the left side. You're blocked out by the ones they planted. And again, the green is one of the hardest greens on the planet to hit a shot to and then to putt. So I wish I could tell you the thinking, but we didn't get there with everybody. But 11's playing better, at least, you know, that you see guys hitting a good tee shot. It was just the angle was weird before. So, and then, you know, it was the deciding moment of the tournament when Ludvig hit it in the water. That was the moment. And Scotty comes through the next group and then probably intentionally misses a green right. And because he knows the golf course, he knows the history, and Ted Scott is part of that too. And I think it's the one difference where we see where Ludvig has room to grow, that that he needs to take a little more ownership. It's all the team. They tell me where to hit it, and I get that he's a very talented guy, and his caddy Joe is a great caddy, but. There's still something. I don't you agree that they're taking some responsibility and learning a little bit of history and learning the backstory. I mean, there's really only a couple of axioms out there. I mean, it's don't hit the pin on 12 on its way, right? And try to miss the green on 11 if you got a chance to win the tournament. Don't really try to hit the green, because you can lose the tournament there. You can't win it there hitting that green in regulation. But you can sure lose it. And he did it. And and then he bounced back, by the way, which is, you know, this guy's amazing. He's impressive.
The shot on 11, we talked about it the other night. It's you got to think he's actually hit a pull. He's pulled at. You know, it's hard to believe that he would hit a shot not where he was aiming, but that might be one where he actually did.
He said he hit it just slightly left of where he was. He was aiming at the right edge of the green, and then it drew. And,
do you believe that? Because it ended up more than slightly left. I think he pulled it quite a bit. But and in terms of, I'm sorry, he's such a talented player. You have to think that no matter from the outside, we think, oh, he doesn't take any responsibility. You don't play like that. You don't develop like that. You don't become the golfer he already is without taking a certain amount of responsibility for your own game. He was a phenomenal college player. Yeah, I think I was about to say Ludwig is very on brand, which that suggests a degree of cynicism or that I'm sure isn't there. But not to generalize on types, but he seems like quite Scandinavian, very quick to be humble, to not elevate himself. So I think he might be over-egging it a little bit on the old team thing, from that perspective. But what a performance. I mean, I'll give you, actually, before we leave the chairman's presser, it seems to be, I think he put the kibosh on a women's masters. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, and I thought he handled it really well because I don't know why the question keeps coming up at this point with the success of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And I guess he had to say what needed to be said, which it just doesn't fit the schedule of our way the course is closed in the summer and we overseed. And it can't be in a certain kind of condition for if we were to do it, it would have to be in the fall. They can't do it. They can't host the U.S. Women's Open or a Women's PGA because they're closed by then. And I just thought he was magnificent in the way he worded that there is also something to the mystique of the Masters.
Yeah.
And they have to be careful not to oversaturate. You know, the genius of them is now they go away for a year. And we've talked about this ad nauseum, and it's part of the genius of what makes it great. And that was a concern going in with the drive chip and with the women's amateur. Would that spoil some of that amazing feeling you get when, you know, the first time you hear the music and they come on and all that? And it hasn't, but they do more of that, and eventually it does. And so it just doesn't fit the schedule. And, you know, doing what they've done with the women's amateurs, doing some pretty great things for the women's game. They can't do everything. And like the question that, you know, Nelly Korda, four in a row, what are they supposed to do?
I think your point about what makes the Masters special, with the clarity of the brand, I mean, I hate to dilute it to that level, but part of the genius, part of the appeal is the clarity of the brand. What I did think, I think he's left a door open a little bit for maybe a Solheim Cup, which I think would be, I think they could get away with it once, you know, once in 10 years. I don't think it would damage their precious Masters brand too much. And it would at least show willing to support the women's professional game in a way. Although I have to say, given the way that women's sports is going now, Jeff, I don't think the women's professional game is going to need, you know, much propping up. I think it's
a media partner that's way more invested than the way Comcast and Golf Channel is going. It needs a commissioner that, I mean, she's like she's in hiding. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I can give you the list of things that are way ahead of Augusta National hosting a tournament. And again, the women's amateur is putting the numbers in here in 5 years already, the conversion rate of success in that event to prominence or confidence that those women got from competing on that stage. You know, all of the intangibles we knew would happen are happening. And they need a commissioner that's a little more, I don't know, out front, aggressive. They need to rethink their scheduling, how they're always finishing in these inconvenient times. I know they don't want to finish on a Saturday tough luck. You're going to have to, that's the reality. Well, to stand out, you've got to be creative. And so I think Augusta's like, I just don't see how they're high on the list of priorities right now versus other things.
You are right. You're right about they need to find a new media partner. I suggest, again, we talked about it earlier, the divergence of the way people consume content opens the door for somewhere like the LPGA Tour to go to Amazon or go to,
well,
you know, again, if I'm looking, if, well, ESPN just signed a $950 million deal with the NCAA for women's sports, with women's right. basketball at the center
which
of
looks
that.
Undervalued.
Yeah, well, it certainly does. It's like the guys who sold Instagram to Zuckerberg for $1 billion. Yeah, oh, I mean, what a, oh yeah. My God, they must be killing themselves. So if I'm Amazon or Apple or Hulu, I mean, I would be looking at the LPGA Tour and thinking, you know what? I mean, it will require a bit of investment, but as a long-term project or medium to long-term project, I think the LPGA is very, very attractive. But we'll see.
I think you're seeing them try to get more stuff on ESPN Plus, featured groups and different things. They've found some openings in their deal, but their problem, as you know, is it wasn't the wrong thing to do that Mike Wann signed on with the tour as part of the negotiations. It was the right thing at the time, but now the way the tour is a hot mess, and the way Golf Channel's being wound down to be converted into a PGA Tour channel, apparently, you know, the forces are now in place that are not, they're just not on the priority list. And I don't know how they get out of the deal, but you would think at some point they're going to have to say, we're behind the Korn Ferry Tour on the priority list with this channel and this network. Now, I say that, by the way, NBC is picking up weekend coverage of the, they have weekend coverage of the Chevron and the KPMG and all of them, except the Avion. And so that's great. And the network thing is big. But again, look at the scheduling. They're still competing in their weeks when Nelly's winning the match play and some of these other things that with the other things, and they're being on tape delay and all this other stuff. And it's just not working. I don't know what the answer is because there's a lot, but this moment of women's sports. And don't you think, I tried this conversation, Lawrence. I don't know. It'd be fun to hear this from some other people, but I think part of the appeal on the golf side, I heard it with the women's amateur, is seeing them that the power game we know is not relatable. It breeds a jag off a lot of the times, and people in this and you know, in basketball, the power game is just throwing up threes, I guess, the equivalent. And the women were people were obviously a star was part of it, but also the way the game was being played was a little more old school, relatable, whatever you want to call it, a little more organized offenses, not as physically silly at times. And I think the women in golf have the same opportunity to play a game that more people relate to. And how they seize on that, I don't know. And it's another thing that where you need a strong commissioner. And their view always on the distance topic, of course, is the complete opposite. Why would you take it away from us? Well, one, if it's designed well, you're not gonna lose anything. And two, this is an advantage for you. People want to see a little bit of everything. And so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is for them, but it's not Fred Ridley's fault. I know.
One thing just to add to what you were saying there, the PGA Tour, I mean, the LPGA at the time, it was the right deal at the time to hook its trailer onto the PGA Tour. But what we've learned over that is the PGA Tour's approach to media is toxic. Yeah. I mean, it really is. And you contrast that with the Masters. Again, we're coming back to praising the Masters. I mean, the social media, the Masters embracing of social media, certainly with its own content, but the people around the social media and the way the current, you know, the modern golf media landscape, I mean, no laying up, just some great stuff. And I'm sure that, I mean, I got the sense that they were being very much accommodated by the Green Jackets. The same with Andy and co at the Fried Egg. Again, really, a modern approach.
Yes.
rather than seeing these people as enemies. Which is what the PGA Tour sees them as. The Masters embraces that, and you would hope that the LPGA Tour, moving ahead, would try and escape the surly bonds, to use a phrase, the surly bonds of the PGA Tour, and find a media partner of its own that would love and embrace and develop women's golf.
You're right. And I think that's where, I mean, I think the moment right now with ESPN, although I say that, and ESPN was kind of goofy on their lead-in coverage of the Masters. They're on site for 2 hours, and all they did was interview NFL players. And of
Yeah,
course, the
that
NFL
was.
guys, I didn't turn it on a lot, but every time I hit the audio when I was at my seat, almost every interview, the guy would go, "Well, I just want to talk about the Masters." Like, they were like, "Why are you asking me about training camp?" And like, give me a break. I'm here at the
Yeah.
Masters. You know,
It was
anyway, but
that
that was weird. But one thing I did,
yeah.
so they've just struggled with golf, ESPN always, it's weird. But one thing I did pick up during the week, I'll find out at Wilshire, but yeah, I heard a lot of stuff related to the women being difficult of late when it comes to stuff and getting interviews and getting, you know, little bits filmed and for social and all the little stuff you got to do. And it's like, huh, I haven't experienced that, including with Nelly Korda. I walked up to her last year at Wilshire, and I had met her before through Jamie Mulligan, and maybe she remembered that, but I don't think so. And she was great. I just said, and she was cited as one of the more, I mean, troublesome players to get to do stuff. So I don't know. I haven't seen that with the women, but I did hear from some people that felt like that is something where they need some work as well. Some coaching. I don't know. I have not seen that at
Right.
all.
Well, I'll let you present that in the context that some of the men are extremely difficult and have been for
No,
years.
I'm not saying the men are better, but
Yeah.
don't
So
to be clear. No, I'm just saying
yeah.
that there were people who feel like they're kind of the equivalent of the way some of the men have gotten with that stuff. But come on, let's be positive. I mean, what a
That's all.
gift. What a gift Bryson DeChambeau is. I mean,
So there you go. That's good. Right.
the man is
But
just he's just gold. He just I mean, picking up the sign and the irons and just the stuff he says in the press, he's never dull. He is never
no,
dull.
that's great. I actually,
He's
and he
great.
added to, I have to say, I've never been a fan, but he did add to the gaiety. Again, social media, the way that it embraced that, and I just love all that stuff. It was great. And again, as I say, we mentioned at the start of the podcast, the leaderboard was really, it was per I mean, the casting director did a very, very
For
good
golf
job, you know.
fans, I don't know. I
Yeah,
think the
the
general public would like to have had an old legend or a whatever. I don't even know what people would want, but yeah, to us it was great. You're right.
Yeah,
Well
the
cast.
any players you want to highlight? A couple of things I want to finish on, but I'll ask you finally on the Masters, any players grab your attention in any particular way that you thought was worth remarking on?
Well, I thought the way Homa played and persisted when and even on his kind of his rough stretch there on Saturday, not making any birdies, not that anybody was really
Yeah,
making
that's
birdies,
right.
but I thought his performance was fantastic. How about Fleetwood using the 70-year-old club caddy to
That was
finish?
cool. Very
Yeah,
cool.
how great is that? So that was fantastic. Great week for the caddies in that sense. That gives them a little bit of a boost. And Bryson was fantastic. Neil Shipley was the low amateur. What a fun performance that was. And it looked like Tiger was, yeah, it was really irritating. We only could ask Tiger 5 questions. And you could tell in the photographs and the video and when Tiger was having a blast with him. And you know why you knew why he would like him. The guy plays fast. And Tiger
The
loves
guy
he
plays
loves
fast.
he loves somebody who doesn't dick around and just goes. You know, he just loves that no nonsense. He admires that in a young player. And you could see, I mean, he was out there, yeah, they're talking Oakmont and Tree. They were talking about they were yapping, you know, Tiger. I mean, he is out of the tournament, but he embraced being an elder statesman and this young guy with a great backstory. By the way, making a case, you know, Dan Jenkins used to love to just debate best educated golfers. And, you know, it's
Oh, he
Bobby
is the one.
Jones, number one, Hillary Lunke, who, you know, wasn't one of the all-time greats. But Neil's got one more degree, and he's like, I mean, he's top
Yeah.
three. And so he seems bright, and he seems like a character. But anyway, we couldn't even ask Tiger, like, how'd it go out there? And he would have, you know, I know he would have given a nice answer about what a cool guy he was. And he beat him by 4, by the way, Neil Shipley did. So
Yeah.
great. He represented the amateurs really well. I'm sure Cliff Roberts was looking down going, why can't he get a haircut? Other than that, Lawrence, I don't really have anybody to, single out. I mean, Tom Kim's last day score was impressive.
Phenomenal.
Rory, I don't know what to make of Rory's week. I mean, he got the worst of the weather there on Friday, as several people did. And then Rom was just weird after the Champions Dinner. He was kind of, it seemed like he was just cranky. Eight official three putts, I believe, although the Spanish press was calling it nine because I think there was one like right on the fringe. It was obviously a putt. Weird week for him. So
I'll give you one media highlight. I'm going to tip my hat to the feature group coverage with Shane Bacon, Colton Austin, I think it was Bill Kravitz.
Yep,
it was really fun. I spent quite a lot of time with that. I thought it was really great contrasts, lots of fun, and especially noticeable when they were replaced by Smiley Kaufman and some other stiff. I thought those three were fantastic. What about yourself? Anybody?
Yeah, I listened to them, and it felt like they weren't required. I think when maybe Bryson was having a good round. Anyway, it looked like they slipped in some people who weren't technically announced as featured group players. So it was essentially coverage. When people complain the Masters doesn't come on till three, it's like, okay, the world has changed. You can see all the golf you need to see all day. It is weird. I get it that it's not till 3 o'clock, but you've got the featured group, which is essentially a broadcast. You can go over to Amen Corner. You can see a lot of golf.
Yeah.
So I get why people complain about it, but it's silly at this point. Cause you're right. It was a good show. And it's not just that they're just showing these featured groups. They got all the graphics, you know, it's a fully produced show. So it's very enjoyable. Shane's got the right tone for Augusta, and they're not afraid to try to, you know, weave in some cute stuff and make some predictions, and Colt's not afraid to be opinionated. So, yeah, no, I agree. They were very good. And of course, the guys on Amen Corner, Grant Boone and Mark Immelman, are always fantastic. So, yeah, no, they just kill it with that stuff. And CBS, I thought, had a great week. Other than I thought they could have drilled down a little bit on a couple of those rulings involving Scotty, but they're just, you know, they're kind of into showing shots. I did notice they were a little behind. It was weird on Sunday because I have both feeds going and Amen. And they were about, I want to say, a minute behind, maybe 45 seconds, what they were showing and what was going on. That was kind of unusual. But anyway, I thought, and of course, the star of the show, co-stars I wrote about today, the drone stuff was more spectacular than ever. And that shot coming off the 18th green has become it's just every year so far, 3 years, has produced this amazing moment. I mean, the most Hideki's was incredible when he walked off the green and you just saw him before your eyes, the emotional release where he just went from greeting some people and then it hit him. And it was just stunning. And it's that camera, the way it locks you in on the, and then Oberg on Sunday watching him,
that was
smiling.
Awesome.
And then he suddenly, like, something crushes him inside, and then he recuperates, and then it was beautiful though. I mean, you know, just that release of the people embracing you, high-fiving. It's, and the light, you know, and even Scheffler, again, he had the same thing. He's high-fiving people. And then he has a moment where he just, like, puts his hand on his face. And it's like, you know, it's over. And then just really amazing television. Like, if you did that in a movie, it wouldn't just, people would be like, it's too much. Like, it's too perfect. So
that walk from the 18th green to the scorers, the scorers room is like, you know, that scene in Goodfellas. I just, you know, the one sweeping shot. I loved the Oberg one. All human life was there. It was magnificent.
The range. So, yeah. You're just all over, which you'd expect, but it was beautiful. And it was, and you watch it before your eyes. We just don't get that in any other place with the combination of the light. And we don't have to go to a commercial break, or we don't have to get in the promo of the FedEx Cup final standings where they are, you know, the Aon 10 update. And it just shows you how good it is.
That's enough praising of the Green Jackets and what they get up to, Jeff, we're never going to be members. Or at least I'm never going to be a member. You might have a chance.
No.
You never know.
We're not member material.
Yeah, we should finish it off. It was actually reported on Sunday, which nobody noticed. Then one of the somebody picked it up, and all of a sudden, City M of that renowned golf publication, Jeff, you reported. City EM, which for those who don't know is a London-based financial paper of medium repute, I think I'll leave it at that. I mean, it's certainly not the Daily Star or of financial journalism, but it's certainly not the Financial Times. Reported oddly, I have no idea if they had anybody there, that Rory was about to sign for LIV for a reputed, I think it was $850 million, plus an equity chunk of, I always have to laugh at these equity chunks. Equity in what?
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, so that was reported. Nobody noticed on Sunday. It never got any kind of traction. Then all of a sudden it got massive traction yesterday and overnight, so much that Rory had to come out this morning and say he will. Well, it was interesting, actually. I'm always interested when these people come out and make clarifications to the exact wording. I think for what it's worth, the City End story was very, very easily deniable simply because it was so specific. But Rory came out this morning, gave an exclusive interview with the Golf Channel. This is Tuesday morning I'm talking about, and said that he will spend the rest of his life playing on the PGA Tour. I don't know. I mean, I have my thoughts on that. I wonder what you thought of it all.
Yeah, no, big, strong denials. That was great. I heard this rumbling last week and didn't really spend much time on it because I didn't want to and I didn't believe it. But it was something that was floating about, and I think it gained a little steam from the press conference he had, which was odd in that the way it was handled. He got there early. I happened to be sitting. I went down early because I know sometimes guys do show up early and I can work on my laptop in there. We can't bring our phone in there, but we can do our laptop. And it started 7 minutes early and ended at 12:33. It was supposed to start at 12:30. And he had given a 10-minute cutoff time, but it made us think, wow, wait a second. Was he trying to avoid that question from being asked? But I just never really bought it in any way. And the timing was suggested it would have been today when we're recording this. Rory knows how the Masters works. He knows there's a bubble around it for 2 weeks. You don't make news. You don't step on their parade or the winner's parade. If it's not him, you don't do that. And so I just didn't buy it. And I still don't buy it. And I don't see him. Yeah, I think we have to acknowledge that there's a reality now that what LIV has is not working either. So yeah, it seemed that was the view on the grounds. I don't know what you've been following. You were tracking everything at speed, but it just between Rom going, oh, we got to go to 72 holes, and Phil finally acknowledged we probably have to go to 72, and some of the guys implying we finally played a real golf course last week, which helped us for this week, but I think we got the vibe from John that he realized, oh yeah, this is this was not the way I wanted to play into this Masters. So that was at least the sense I got that there's a realization.
Well, and on the Ram thing, I think you have to take into account there's probably a little bit of projection. People want him to feel, you know, fans, I guess we could call them, the PGA Tour want Ram to feel like buyer's remorse. So they might project that on him. I'm not sure you could read that much into it. But on the McIlroy thing, it didn't sound like when somebody mentioned it to me a couple of days ago, I just thought it was crazy. However, again, with all these things, very, very forthright and, you know, apparently clear denial that he is going to live. I will spend the rest of my life playing on the PGA Tour, which doesn't preclude Rory playing on something like that he floated recently about, you know, IPL, the Indian Premier League cricket idea. I mean, you could play on the PGA Tour, and it's quite easy to imagine in 5 years' time, a guy like Rory or Ludwig or anybody really could be playing on the PGA Tour from January through to the end of August. And then you have 5 months, 4 months to play with, and they might go off and play in some kind of new creation. But we'll see on that. But yeah, I think my goodness, could you imagine if McIlroy had announced he was off? The global home would have been in flames,
Oh,
wouldn't it, Jeff?
yeah, it would have been ugly. I mean, because I think that is the danger, is they are one or two players away
They
from
are.
the networks going, okay, what are we doing here? What are we paying you for? And then the whole thing unravels. So I think that is the danger there, and they better be nice to him and a few others. That said, again, the Liv guys seem to have a different take. Nobody understands why they've backed off their world ranking application. I mean, it's the first thing out of Fred Ridley's mouth in answer to Bob Herrig's question on that. He cited that right out of the gate. Well, like, what, you know,
He
so
did.
they've bungled some things on their end. Of course, Greg Norman coming out and saying that, you know, every fan's coming up to him and thanking him for starting Liv, and it showed him that the platform fits within the
Oh my God.
ecosystem. I mean, that's, I was reading that in the press center, and I just let out the biggest laugh reading that. It was Rick Mays's Washington Post story that was quoted, and I had a bunch of people like turn, like, "What are you laughing at?" It just made me laugh. When I needed a laugh all week, I just thought of Greg going that the platform fits within the ecosystem. He's such a tool.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
yeah.
The stuff about thousands of people. I mean, it's like the Donald Trump, you know, thing about grown men crying, Mr.
Yeah.
President, you know. Yeah. I mean, just
By the way,
again,
we do
pure
need
gift.
to give a shout out to another pod. Of course, you noted some of the others. I'm going to be doing some catching up this week and check out some of the things. Yeah, I just can't listen to those things during the week. And when I leave the course, I just put on some music in the car. I don't want to listen to any more golf talk. But
Yeah.
our friend of the pod, Ian Carter's show with Andrew Cotter, I believe it's the April 10th episode that's worth listening to, because I think that's the episode where Andrew explains how at the European Tour dinner that he had a nice chat with Jay Monahan, who was congratulating him on his transition from being a professional golfer and former Ryder Cupper to a broadcaster, confusing
What
him
a
with
tool,
Andrew
Andrew
Coulthard.
Coulter.
It was a little
I
late
mean,
for him.
really? Yeah, that is.
So
Oh, yeah.
apparently, and of
Kudos.
course, you know
Oh.
Andrew Cotter. I'm sure he tells it in absolutely fantastic fashion. So I'm looking forward to savoring that one today.
Okay.
So yeah.
Right. Anyway, right. Oh, I will mention that when you bring Andrew up, Cotter filed a story for the upcoming edition of McKellar about playing golf with these two dogs, Olive and Maple. So, or of Maple, Olive and Mabel. So
Yes.
that should be decent reading
Oh, I
when you
can't
get
wait.
it. Any other business, Jeff? Are we done? I guess we are done at this stage
No,
as
I
well for
think
a
it
while.
was I guess the only thing I'm just kind of, I don't know if I still haven't understand. I mean, you thought it was a great week. So I guess that was it. I wanted to know what you know, 'cause we get very close to it. You're there. You are influenced by being there, and tend to probably not dwell on certain things, but it sounds like it, what we
Oh,
saw taking place, kind of it came through on to the outside
it
world
was
too.
I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful week. As you say, I think you rightly identified it would have been great if we'd been going down
Yeah.
70, 17 and 18 on Sunday, but you know, you can't have everything. Actually, reflecting back, it's not often that that really happens at the Masters. The best players usually don't they? I mean, am I misremembering this? But the best players usually are able to separate themselves. I guess you look back at 19, I guess, most recently.
Yeah,
That was
that's probably
a
the
pretty
last.
fluid, yeah, pretty fluid
Well,
leaderboard
yeah,
coming down the end.
we got spoiled. I mean, the 70s and 80s and early 90s had a lot go to the end, as we know, and obviously a lot of
Yeah.
playoffs. So it just does feel like there is something going on right now, though, where, yeah, now right currently the leader needs to get it on the 12th green, and it seems like it's over at that point. So I don't know. I think they need to reflect a little bit on how hard they make the course at times, because, and I've written about this in the past, it's very hard to ask a player to be on pins and needles for 3 days and then flip a switch. That said, they did. They had 11 rounds in the 60s on Sunday and 9 all week before that. And again, the wind was insane. I got to tell you, here's one. I just got to tell you one story, because I'm sitting at the top of the grandstand. Ricky So a couple guys come through, and the wind is just so ridiculous. You could tell they just go, screw it. I'm just hitting the shot. I'm just not even going to try to figure this wind out. So Ricky Fowler's over a ball, and you're looking. The pin on 11 is blowing hard to the left. The one on 12 is blowing hard to the right. But at times, the pin just stops on 12, and the tree. But the trees are just bending, these giant Georgian pines. Anyway, so Ricky does it. You see him looking at the pin on 12. He's trying to take it all in. What the hell do you do? And as he makes contact, pin on 11 going hard left, green pin going hard right. As he makes contact and the ball starts to go in the air, the pin on 12 completely is blowing hard to the left. It completely flips. And he hit the green, but you just look at it and you go, ah, it's insane. That little corner, it's just insane what the wind does. And one of my commenters pointed out to you, it's one thing CBS needs to somehow someday is convey that more than just Ken Venturi's thing. But it was funny that a few guys just went, you could just tell. I was like, screw it. I'm not going to try to figure it out. I'm just going to hit. So it was really hard out there. And I did feel for the guys because the greens got so fast a few times. But yeah, but they kept it playable. And so, yeah, all in all, a good week. We'll see what kind of, you know, buzz this gives the sport or if it does at all. But I guess my biggest takeaway is I'm very happy to see how many people are coming around on that way things have been handled are not good and they need to turn it around. So that's good.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it on that. Yeah. Good positive note to finish on, Jeff. I will speak to you again next week.
Okay. Thanks, Lawrence.
It's a wild.